Hello and welcome to the SearchSecurity.com podcast, sponsored by Guardian. I'm Nicole Damore. Thanks for joining us today. In this podcast, we're going to cover the top five ways to address application vulnerabilities without touching the code. We're fortunate today to be joined by Corey Scott, a director for security consulting firm Matisano Security. Thanks for being here, Corey.
And thank you.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of our Integration of Networking and Security School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to searchsecurity.com/netsec. Corey, let's set the stage before we begin. Tell us about the application vulnerability scenario we're going to discuss and why code often can't be fixed right away.
Sure. So, put yourself in the position of a network manager, an infrastructure manager, or a security officer who has access to the underlying infrastructure of that runs a set of applications, but you do not have access or the influence of onto the actual application code. And all of a sudden, a vulnerability appears in one of your applications. Now, the vulnerability could be the result of several different investigative sources. The first would be that you actually wanted vulnerabilities found in your code. For example, you had a bespoke assessment or penetration test performed against your application, or you ran an automated code scanner or vulnerability scanner against your application. You may have received a vulnerability report from an information security researcher or simply an interested user or a power user of your application. You may have received a vulnerability bulletin from a given third-party software vendor that you have deployed their application, and they've let you know that there's a vulnerability, and they don't have a fix for it yet, but they will. And then fourth, and unfortunately sometimes this happens, you actually have an incident that takes place in your environment, and you've been able to perform a post-mortem to identify the root cause of that vulnerability is an application problem. So you have a vulnerability identified in your application, and you've got to fix it, but you can't fix the code. And why can't you fix the code? Well, there's several reasons. One, you may not have the source. And in this case, you know, it might be a third-party application where they just ship you a binary, and there's just nothing that you can do other than control the database, the web application framework, the web server, or the network infrastructure underneath that application. Perhaps the developer is simply not available. They may be a contracting firm that you've engaged at one point in time, but now they're no longer available immediately to fix the code. Or your lead developer simply may be on vacation. So in those cases, you can't get into the code to get it fixed. Sometimes you may even have access to the code, but it can't be fixed right away because your change control processes won't let it happen. One of the kind of the ironies is sometimes code can't be fixed quickly because the security change control process won't let it happen. And the reason for that might be user acceptance testing, regression testing needed to make sure the application doesn't break on even the most minor changes or for security fixes. The final reason may simply be that you have an application that's in legacy mode or is simply too fragile to manipulate. So those are the kind of circumstances where you may be tasked with trying to solve a vulnerability problem in an application, but you can't fix the code right away.
Okay, let's get to the options. The first way to address an application vulnerability without touching the code is to shut down the application. Corey, that's obviously a dramatic move. When is it the best option?
So we have to use risk management principles and make sure that this is a business-oriented decision. Sometimes what happens is we get too wrapped up in our approach of always making anything work at all costs. And as a result, we sometimes focus too much on the technical and not so much on the business risk management side of things. So we need to make sure when we're trying to address a vulnerability, and we really want to fix it, and we really want to protect everyone, but we may just simply not realize that the cost of an exploit of this given application may be significantly higher than the outage time or the lack of availability of a given application. So when you go and you make this type of decision about an application where it may be a situation where you shut it down, you need to be very clear about the probability of exploitation in that given environment. You can't just have, for example, a game over vulnerability in an application without stating that the likelihood of when and how it would be exploited and for what purpose. So typically, we don't see this option being used unless an incident has already occurred. In other words, your point may have already been proven for you.
Continuing on, the next strategy to address an application vulnerability without touching the code is to remove the functionality. Corey, under what circumstances is this an option?
So hopefully, an application has enough knobs and switches for you, even as an infrastructure or network security type of person, to be able to manipulate certain parts of the application. So ideally, maybe there's a control panel or configuration file that can be tweaked or changed so that you, if there's a vulnerability in just a given subset of functionality of the application, consider the ability to actually turn that off. So if the application, for example, exposes an administrative interface and the vulnerability that you've been identified is in that administration interface, you may decide that you can turn that off 99% of the time and only turn it on when you actually need it. And maybe there's a switch or a control panel that allows you to turn that on and off. Or maybe it listens on a different port and you can block access to that port. So there's different ways that you can simply remove that functionality. If the application doesn't actually have those control panels or configuration files, those knobs or switches, you can also look for ways to block that at the network or the web server level. So at the network layer, you can use your load balancers and your layer 7 firewalls to actually look for, if it's a web type of vulnerability, to actually look at the URI that's being passed in the application. So for example, let's say you have a vulnerability in a file upload function, and that function exists at /upload. You could use your load balancer to redirect all traffic to the upload function, /upload, to a null destination, or simply block that traffic. You may also be able to write some very rudimentary signatures in an intrusion prevention system to do that. And, of course, there are web application firewalls that will allow you to block certain pieces of functionality, and they may even have some of those pre-configured for you. If you don't have that capability at the network layer, and it's kind of awkward at the network layer, then in certain cases, you can also go ahead and block that at the web server layer. So, for example, let's go back to our /upload vulnerability. In that case, you may be able to use, for example, the web server configuration to block access or deny access to anonymous or unauthenticated access to those functions, therefore getting rid of that functionality.
So how should security pros handle that politically? Shutting off some functionality probably isn't going to go over well with the developers and the business groups that depend on the application. What's the best approach there?
So my philosophy in approaching people about addressing vulnerabilities where you may have an impact on their production lifecycle is you really need to go in with an open mind. You need to be prepared to really talk about the likelihood of exploitation of a given vulnerability. And so you want to be able to go in there, you know, with some data. So luckily, in the last couple of years, there have been some really good reporting on the types of data breaches and the kind of the root causes of data breaches in applications and in infrastructure. So you should be able to crib off of some of that in order to actually talk about some of the likelihood of exploitation. Additionally, if you have a vulnerability that is focused on things that can be automated through malicious code scanners. We see this in SQL injection. We see this on certain blog platforms or the like. You can actually say, look, you know, we see a scan for vulnerable instances of this type of technology every 36 hours by our IDS. And so we're pretty sure that if this scanner gets updated with this malicious code and it targets this vulnerability, where you have a really good likelihood of it being exploited. So what you want to do is talk about the likelihood, then also talk about the technical impact of exploitation. Make sure you talk about the data and the functionality in the application that would be impacted, but don't make assumptions about the business impact. Allow that to come from the business owner of the application. The idea is to let them tell you that impact. Even though you may have a really good idea about what it is, it's much better to let them walk with you rather than run ahead and come to a conclusion without bringing them along. So you want to talk then about the effectiveness of given mitigations, the things that you can do. And so those include some of the other options that we'll talk about in a minute. But also let them talk about alternatives. I mean, what did they do before the application or that piece of functionality actually was live? Always try to present choices to them, but frame them in a way that both sides can live with it.
Our next strategy for addressing an application vulnerability without touching the code, minimize the impact. Corey, what does that involve?
So that's very vulnerability specific. So for example, you need to look at the underlying impact. So if a given application vulnerability actually impacts the infrastructure, then you have a chance to actually use this tip. A good example of this is SQL injection. So we see SQL injection in applications where there really is no business of the underlying database account being used by the application should have any right access to the database or the ability to execute stored procedures. So you can change the underlying database connection properties to a very low privileged account. So even if that SQL injection is still present on the website, the only thing that can happen is that data can be read out of that out of the given tables that the application has been granted access to. And if it's, for example, just like a public-facing marketing website or something like that, it may not look the greatest. But since you don't have access to the code, at the minimum, you'll be able to restrict the infrastructure impact by not allowing, for example, that database to be overwritten with content or a command shell or other file copy operations to happen on the database server. If it's cross-site scripting, you also have a chance here too. We see in some cases people who really cannot fix a cross-site scripting vulnerability either due to the kind of the active content nature of the application or some of the functionality. They all actually host that in a different domain so that the script executes only in a very restricted domain context rather than the rest of the application's DOM so that the impact is minimized. Also, in the case of file or upload or download vulnerabilities, you can restrict the file system access that a given web server or application server has access to so that process can't overwrite critical files. And if it's code execution, you can actually reduce the privilege level of that application so that it doesn't result in an automatic game over for the entire web application server. Now, if it's a business logic or access control or race condition type of vulnerability, this isn't going to work for you in most cases, minimizing the impact using just the tools within infrastructure probably aren't going to help you here.
Next up on our list of the top 5 ways to address an application vulnerability without touching the code, prevent exploitation. Corey, what security technologies or tools can do that?
So typically what you'll see here is a real sweet spot for web application firewall technology or other types of layer 7 intrusion prevention systems. The idea here is that you go ahead and let the functionality of the application be, and you let users continue to interact with the application without making any changes to your underlying infrastructure from the application stack down. Instead, you use a web application firewall ahead of that to inspect user requests, determine if it's an active exploitation technique, and then render that attack useless. Typically, that renders it by just refusing that packet or that request before being forwarded to the given application. In other cases, it may actually strip out the malicious content and allow the rest to go through. In these cases, what you want to make sure that you do is that you're not using the web application firewall to block a given proof of concept exploit. You know, penetration testing firms and web application scanners sometimes will give you a result with a proof of concept, particularly for, you know, things such as SQL injection or cross-site scripting. And if you actually tell the web application firewall simply only to block that given exploit, although there's an underlying issue with that particular application where the vulnerability can be exploited in a lot of different ways, you need to actually make sure that the web application firewall is configured to block all instances of SQL injection or cross-site scripting on a given interface or a given form field. In fact, what you can do is in most traditional web application firewalls is implement a whitelisting approach for user input into these types of fields. So the idea is to focus on restricting the minimum amount of input that you can, rather than just trying to block a couple of bad things.
And our last strategy to address an application vulnerability without touching the code, detect exploitation. Corey, how's this done, and is this more of a reactive approach that comes with more risk?
So when you're detecting exploitation, you've basically stated that you're going to let an attacker interact with your application in a way that you didn't want them to. Now, there's a couple reasons why that may happen. The first is that it's simply a low-risk vulnerability, or that you've determined, hopefully aligned with the business, that if someone tries to exploit this application with given a given low-risk vulnerability, we're just going to look to see what's going on and make sure that it doesn't escalate into something worse. And so you may use your traditional log monitoring solution. You may have a firewall monitoring product or a traditional IDS that may log some of those requests and just tell you when they're being attempted to be exploited. So you can then interact a more reactive approach to blocking further traffic from that given source or doing some impact analysis after the fact. And then you may, as a result, when you actually see this kind of low-risk exploitation, then go ahead and bring in some of the other options that we've talked about today. So it's not something that we typically don't feel very comfortable with, you know, letting someone potentially exploit us, as particularly even with a lower-risk finding. But sometimes that's the only way that you're going to be able to get it kind of moved up the chain. And if the business or the technology teams do not support you fixing it at the time that it's detected, at the minimum, give yourself the capability to say when it is being exploited so that you'll be ahead of the game the next time this happens. The other type of case where this can happen is more on where the vulnerability is just simply too difficult to detect at the network layer or at the web server layer. So we're talking about business logic vulnerabilities, something that is so intrinsic. For example, how do you detect on an exploitation where there's a race condition where a funds transfer that was supposed to go from party A to party B was manipulated by an attacker to go to destination C instead? In those types of cases, you really need to ensure that there's some type of manual operational process to look, for example, at funds transfers and the expected behavior of the application. And hopefully there's some type of application log file or operational procedure with the back office staff of a given application that can help you identify when these types of vulnerabilities are being exploited. But you want to set up the framework for how these application exploitations are going to happen and make sure that the impacted parties can detect it on your behalf or in those cases.
As we wrap things up, Corey, these are all short-term strategies. How long should an organization wait to actually address the code of an application that represents a security risk?
So, driven by the risk and potential impact of a vulnerability, you need to really put bugs into, you know, four buckets. And the four buckets that we suggest are, you know, fix now, schedule a fix, plan the fix, which means that it's going to actually take some serious thinking about how to implement the fix, or then finally how to find another way to deal with the risk, some type of mitigation. So that's typically, through some of the same options that we've outlined today, or through potentially a re-architecture of the application. Now, as an organization, you really need to figure out how long each vulnerability can last in a given bucket without raising it to an escalated risk.
Okay, before we go, let's recap our list of the top 5 strategies for addressing an application vulnerability without touching the code. Shut down the application, remove the functionality, minimize the impact, prevent exploitation, and detect exploitation. Corey Scott of Matasano Security, thank you for joining us. For more materials in our Integration of Networking and Security School, visit searchsecurity.com/netsec. You can also listen to more of our podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, Guardium, and thank you for joining us. I'm Nicole DeMore. Have a great day.